The gangster slash historical figure Frank Matthews is the most asked about person I've ever documented. Frank Matthews beat the mafia, got the girls, took care of all the people he came up with back in Durham, North Carolina, and then simply vanished like Houdini when they finally indicted him. But this is a rundown of the new information my production partner Ron Chepsik and I found out since the original documentary, The Frank Matthews Story, was released. This was back in 1973. For those of you who have not seen The Frank Matthews Story, go check it out. This is not a part two. There probably won't be a part two into The Frank Matthews Story unless he's brought into custody. Which ties into the question everyone asks, is he still alive? The marshals certainly seem to think so. In fact, an interesting slash disturbing takeaway I had from our off-camera conversations with the feds was this. Me and Ron Chepsik kept saying, well, if he died in a remote foreign country, how would you know? Well, it turns out Big Brother will find out if you have passed from the land of the living, no matter how remote your hiding place is, unless someone literally dissolves you in a vat of acid. But remember, teeth don't dissolve even in most acid, so that probably wouldn't work either. Eventually, the record of your death will make it into some database somewhere, and America will find out. So here's the first new event. Clinton Shorty Buse was from Baltimore and gave us a very intelligent and powerful interview. Buse played a recurring character in the final season of The Wire as part of the heroin-dealing combination that controls the city. Shorty kept us in the dark about what exactly he did in the underworld. He said he was known as a Solomon, a card sharp, a professional gambler. But if I was gonna bet, I'd bet that he set up heroin connections sometimes for people in Baltimore with people in New York, but I'm not a gambler. So if Shorty says he was a professional gambler who crossed paths with Frank Matthews many times while gambling in New York, then that's what it was. But he was definitely a well-known and well-loved legend among his generation in Baltimore. And when he died a few years ago, he had a very large funeral. And guess what? The feds lined the route to the cemetery. I wish I would have known. We would have gone and gotten footage and interviewed people. The feds lined the route of the funeral to the cemetery with Frank Matthews wanted posters. Now, they wouldn't go to all that trouble and expense if they weren't pretty sure that Matthews was alive. They were obviously hoping one of the old timers that went to Clinton Buse's funeral was in communication with Frank and would turn him in. But I think the same old $20,000 reward, or maybe it's $30,000 now, from 1973 is still in effect. Now, $20,000 was some money back in the mid-70s, but it's not much now. Though, as the DEA knows better than anybody, and me too, because I've given a lot of them $500, some of the biggest gangsters from yesteryear, guys who literally used to throw money out of the windows of their cars, haven't seen $1,000 at one time since the 80s. But no one at Buse's funeral called in and told them where Frank Matthews was at. Now let's go back to the beginning of the Frank Matthews criminal case for another quick mystery. The entire investigation into Frank Matthews, which culminated in his arrest and disappearance, supposedly began when an NYPD sergeant named Joe Kowalski moved into a high-end Brooklyn apartment building when he got a raise. In this new building, he noticed a fur coat-clad black resident who had so many people coming to visit him that the parking lot was so full of cars he couldn't find a parking space. How he connected these two things is kind of a question, but Kowalski started observing Matthews and writing down license plate numbers and running them while at his NYPD job, and the plates started coming back to well-known black and Hispanic dealers from around the country. And he got put in touch with federal officials, and a task force was assembled to go after Frank Matthews. The rest, they say, is history. Now, Ron Chepsik found Joe Kowalski back when he first started working on the Frank Matthews project when it was called the Black Caesar, and he did an interview with him. But the first filmmaker he partnered up with, not Al Proffitt, the guy who had the Joe Kowalski footage, got himself into a legal situation. He went to buy some kilograms, and when the plug told him to deposit the money in a bank account, he did. Needless to say, it was the feds, and he was in big trouble, especially since he'd already been to federal prison. And he got out on bail, but then Ron never heard from him again, and the Kowalski footage disappeared with him. And then when we tried to find Kowalski, the addresses and phone numbers that he formally responded to went silent. And that's why he wasn't in the documentary, the guy that first brought him on the radar to law enforcement. In the original Frank Matthews Story documentary, we had to breeze through a lot of things, but just exactly how was Frank Matthews able to bypass the Italians, AKA who was his plug? As best we can tell, an infamous Cuban lottery kingpin named Spanish Raymond Marquez from Spanish Harlem, East Harlem, New York, hooked Frank up with another Cuban named Rolando Gonzalez in the late 60s. Gonzalez had to flee to Venezuela right at that time, maybe around 66 or 7. And in my upcoming doc, Cocaine Condor, I talk about how Cuban criminals were allowed carte blanche by the CCIIAA, a word I am afraid to say, as it may risk the monetization on my video. In late 1972, there was an H drought on the East Coast, but Matthews' Venezuelan contacts, Gonzalez, were set to break it with an initial load of 60 pounds of untouched H coming from the newly revitalized French Connection, the Corsican Mafia from France, and a pipeline with an unlimited supply of H from Marseille, France, was gonna open back up. But that first load got hit in Caracas, Venezuela. And this was the start of the case that culminated in Matthews' indictment and arrest before he vanished. Here's newspaper headlines. The seizure of 70 pounds of heroin and cocaine with an estimated street value of $60 million, arrests of 14 persons in Caracas and Miami have broken up an international drug ring, the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs said today. The arrests were an example of coordination between Venezuelan police and U.S. agents, said John Ingersoll, the director of the BNDD. The agency's announcement said that the arrests in Miami of Elpidio Hernandez and Orlando La Madrid, both Cubans, came after a two-week investigation. In Caracas, 58 pounds of heroin were found in a suitcase seized in a hotel by the Venezuelan police. 12 members of the alleged ring were arrested in Caracas after one of them, Jules Cerini, who we mentioned in depth in White Part of Black Power and in Frank Matthews' story, a Frenchman, he was an actor actually that was being used to smuggle stuff over, was identified. Mr. Cerini, carrying two large suitcases, was followed to a hotel in Caracas where he met with two other suspects, Marcelo Cabot, an American, and Antonio Surratt, a Venezuelan. This was kind of the last gasp of heroin coming from France. Interesting to note that Venezuela, a disaster of a country, Mad Max, beyond Thunderdome land, at the time of these events in the 70s, it was the richest country in South America. Now, in the Frank Matthews story and in episode 3 of American Dope, the Fed prosecutor overseeing the Matthews case talks about this arrest, which was a key component, again, of the Matthews indictment. Guess what happened? The CCIIAA showed up at the prosecutor's office on Monday morning and told him that the charges against all the Venezuelan defendants, including Rolando Gonzalez, were being dropped as there were, quote, political considerations with the Russians. And last I knew, Rolando Gonzalez, Frank Matthews, one of his, maybe his original big plug, he probably met other people, maybe bigger people, but that was his original guy. Never went to jail or was brief, and he was alive in Venezuela at the age of 90 years old plus as of a couple years ago. Another mysterious tentacle of Frank Matthews' power we didn't go into too much was down in Atlanta, Georgia. In 1971, this is per the DEA, not street rumors, Frank convened a meeting, a summit. He called, put the word out to the cities of America for the biggest Hispanic and black drug dealers to come down to Atlanta and talk about forming a formal black mafia. It's like something out of a movie. This really happened. And also Frank was getting information that only someone very high up in the food chain in the Georgia state government could have given him. Matthews purchased land around Atlanta that was soon to be bought up as part of the interstate highway expansion the federal government, and he would have made tens of millions of dollars if he hadn't have disappeared. And that information could only have come from the federal government itself or like the governor's office. And Frank was born in 1943, if you didn't know, so all this was happening when he was 28. Wow. Quick Detroit tie-in. Courtney Brown Sr., watch my doc Motown Mafia for more on him. He was arrested in Las Vegas with Matthews as part of a roundup. Lots of major black kingpins were in Vegas for the New Year's and the Super Bowl gambling action. Courtney Sr. was, I found out later, friends with Mickey Beckwith, Frank's right-hand man, who served a lengthy sentence for the conspiracy case Frank avoided. Now, at that level, friends probably means something else, but Mr. Brown said friends. Friends it is, but it shows that Frank had connections to the biggest dealers in Detroit also, which is the second biggest heroin city in America to New York to this day. And Detroit always had its own unique sources of supply, and it does to this day, ranging from the Middle East to the Far East to Sicily, dating back to the late 1940s. But Frank was doing something there. And then there's the tale of the Corsican sending 400 kilos of once of pure H straight from the labs in Marseille to Frank and his junior partner in a deal, one L. Bynum of Harlem in 1971. These were hidden inside underwater mines left over from Germany's defense against the Allied invasion of 1944. You can hear all about that in White Powder Black Power. And a new factoid I found out, the federal government estimated that one-third of all the H that came into the U.S. in 1971 passed through Frank Matthews' hands. One-third. So what about Frank Matthews' disappearance? There's a few big questions. First, the woman he left with, Cheryl Brown, and also the family he left behind. Since the original doc came out, Ron Chepsick obtained a picture of Cheryl Brown, the woman Frank initially left New York with in 73. Cheryl Brown's parents were a solid middle-class couple, both teachers, I think, and they were questioned extensively at the time. Their phones were tapped, but nothing. And as Ron and I thought about what happened to Matthews, this seemed to be a piece of evidence pointing to he and Cheryl Brown's rapid demise after their disappearance. Would a young lady from a nice family just cut off all communication with her parents? Wouldn't she get lonely one night and make one phone call? Because the feds were sitting on the phone, and she didn't. So that means she must have been dead, right? Well, the plot thickens. After the doc came out, we found out that Cheryl Brown's parents visited the island of Curacao about a year or less after their daughter and Frank vanished. Where is Curacao? It's right off the coast of Venezuela, where Frank Matthews' CIA-protected drug suppliers operated. And we're also told, I can't remember what specifically this was, but there's some evidence Cheryl Brown came back to America after a few years and just blended back in with society, because she had no arrest warrant, right? She hadn't done anything. She just went on an extended vacation with her boyfriend. What about his family? Frank Matthews had two sons and a wife that he was living with in a mansion he built for them in an exclusive lily white section of Staten Island right across the street from future Gambino mafia boss Big Pauly Castellano. He even had a private Jewish tutor for his son, so he was an engaged father, yet when he disappeared, the feds, who sat on everyone tight, watched everyone for years, phone taps, never heard a peep from Frank to his sons. His wife, Barbara Hinton, was on the indictment that Frank dipped out on, but she got a mistrial, I think, and the money Frank left her and the sons lasted for some time. They might have owned a liquor store in New York, but we're not sure. They did eventually land in Cincinnati. When the documentary came out, one of his sons reached out to us on the phone. He wanted some money for an interview. Now, back then, when I was still living on DVD money, which all the bum bootleg men messed up for me, I didn't have it. But now in the YouTube era, I do. So reach back out to me if you see this. My Instagram is alprofit. When his two sons had some legal problems in the 80s, the feds figured Matthews might show up to help. He didn't. But what does that mean? Men of all demographics leave their kids behind and move on with life all the time. Doesn't mean he's dead. There was a guy from Detroit named John Klassen who was the black kingpin of Detroit at the time. He was the guy that put Detroit legend Eddie the Fat Man Jackson on in the beginning. Ike McKinnon, the former Detroit police chief of Detroit, told me that when he was a young cop, that he would see John Klassen with the living room full of cash that you could see through his big front glass window in his house, and he would just be counting millions of dollars. But the beat cops were under orders not to bother Klassen. So Klassen, I mean, he's sort of the Frank Matthews of Detroit. He wasn't as big, but he was a big DEA target, and he disappeared and was never found. I did find this picture of him on eBay, of all places. There's no record of him going to federal prison, so I assume he got away also. So where could Frank have gone so that he would have stayed hidden for at least until the mid-80s, when the heat had died down and crack cocaine was dominating the media and maybe he could come back to America? I would say the Caribbean. There's thousands of islands, many black people, including lots of black people with money vacationing from the U.S. or Africa, or even just from the Caribbean itself. And so a black guy, you know, with money and nice clothes, checking in and out of hotels and getting on planes and boats and moving around, that's regular in the Caribbean. That wouldn't have caused any suspicion. And another interview we couldn't get for the documentary was that of a well-known black New York news anchor who told the feds he bumped into Frank in the Bahamas around 1980. And he said he saw a guy and said, "Hey, Frank Matthews." And the guy looked startled and smiled and said, "Hey," and then vanished. But we couldn't find him. Now, I'm pretty sure the feds think Matthews came back to the U.S. in the 80s and blended into society in one of the major black population centers other than New York. Chicago, which would be near to his wife and kids in Cincinnati, maybe Houston near the border where he had to make a quick escape. And finally, what if Frank Matthews was caught today? Could they really prosecute him other than for bail jumping? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, unlike Whitey Bulger, who had plenty of living witnesses to testify against him, I don't know who they could get to testify against Matthews. And there's no more original case file, to our understanding. Ron Chepsik, who has access to DEA archives and you know, the prosecutor's archives, found that apparently someone had checked out the entire original Frank Matthews case file and never returned it. And yet they still look for him. Maybe it's just because he's a legend and the old agents who know about the case, no one still actively employed would be old enough to have worked the original case, you know, pressure the current guys, because everyone just wants to know the answer to the mystery of the Mr. Big who got away just like the rest of us. Frank Matthews. Remember to subscribe to youtube.com/alprofit. Go to americandope.com and buy some merch. Go on amazon.com, watch the episodes of American Dope, Cold War Heroin Heat, Acid Dreams, White Powder Black Power, Cocaine Condor, Al Profit, American Dope.